Okay, so let's do, I guess, one more day on Rabbi Lam and Baal Otcha. So here's from another drasha that he called a flair for the undramatic. So then there are a lot of stories in Baal Otcha. We've picked up on which ones did we do? We did the Miriam story. So we did his drasha on humility. What did I do? Which other story did I take up? No, we did 2 days. It's a good question. I have to see. Oh, the swimming upstream, the Noonan, the double, the okay, right. Yeah. All right, it's not really a story, right? I was like, not another narrative. No, the backwards Noons and the Midrash HaNe'elam. So here we move to one of the central narratives of the Parsha, and that is the story of Pesach Sheni.
Oh.
So, what happens in Pesach Sheni? Right, the people come and they say, "Anachnu tmeim lenevesh adam, lama nigara levilti hikrivet korban Hashem b'moado b'toch b'nei Yisrael." We were tamei. Why aren't we allowed? Why should we lose out? Which many drashot have been made, and this is what we'll talk about on that phraseology. Lama nigara, where they feel like they're losing out, and that's what motivates them to want to participate in the mitzvahs. They come to Moshe, and what's Moshe's answer? Yeah, I have no idea. Let me ask God. And Chazal say, right? As Rabbi Lam summarizes it, the Jewish tradition has only praise for these anonymous individuals who presented their petition to Moses. Right, meaning these people want to be mekayim mitzvot, and therefore Chazal say megalgalin zchud al yidei zakai, because of their excitement and their desire to be mekayim the mitzvah and not just take advantage of the fact that they were patur. What can you do? So. The Psikta said, "Melamed shayu bnei Yisrael kshirim tzadikim v'charedim al mitzvot." These people loved; they were fearful of the mitzvot, and therefore the mitzvah got instituted as in response to their request. Right? They were the proximate cause for the mitzvah coming into existence, which is really quite an incredible statement. So what Rabbi Lam asked is. Right. Why are the Midrashim so complimentary of these people? Meaning, obviously, they're good people. But as you said, the rabbis are usually sparing in their compliments. Is not their praise here somewhat extravagant? What does Chazal say? Right. So Chazal tell a whole backstory. What Rabbi Lam argues in this, you know, we've seen this in Agarata, that often to understand any Agarata or any Midrashic statement, you understand the full picture that the Midrash imagines. So, they don't just think they were tamei. What do Chazal think they were tamei with? So, obviously they were tamei mate. That's what they said. Right? Ana tamei lenefesh adam. But who? So, Chazal have a backstory. Either a mate mitzvah, right? Someone who had no one to take care of the body, or Yosef. Right, or they were the ones who were carrying Atzmot of Shal Yosef. Right, these are the two stories that the Gemara tells you in Sukkah Chav Hei. Who is doing Sukkah this year or last year? When do you get? So what? You don't remember? Is that? There's not like a Gemara. Sukkah Chav Hei, Osik Mitzvah Patur Min Mitzvah. This is the Gemara it quotes. This is the Pesukim it quotes. Oh God. Zev, you're like giving me like. How could you not? I love you all. Please remember Gemaras. It's important. At least, maybe you've forgotten the Gemaras we talked about, or how bad it is to forget Gemara, because then at least that'll mitigate this and move that to Shogeg. But so one is that it's mate mitzvah. And the other is that they were involved in Yosef. Right? They were carrying the bones of Yosef. But so Elam first focuses on the mate mitzvah, and here's what he says. He says the heroism and the praiseworthiness of those who petitioned for a second Passover lie in this. Look at the alternatives with which they were faced: either to celebrate the Passover or to care for the mate mitzvah. That particular Passover was the first anniversary of their freedom. It would be a highly festive occasion in which all the folk of Israel, according to their many families, would joyously celebrate the most historical Seder ever, the first one since Egypt. I'll be honest, you know, I've seen these Gemaras before, but I find this drasha very helpful in sort of getting into the Midrash. Right? Because what is the Midrash really saying, or the Gemara saying, if you combine it with the Midrash, that they were willing to be the ones who bury the main mitzvah, knowing the costs, even though this isn't just a Pesach. Right? That's an obvious point, and I never really thought about it. It's not a Pesach, it's the first one. Right? And we all know that at some point, things can become, you know, whatever, we do it, we celebrate it, it's a holiday, very good. Right? But you've got to imagine that this is Yom HaTzmaut 1949. Right? When it's still real in people's heads, the war maybe ended, whatever, like, this is real. This is their first chance to celebrate. It's like in Purim. Right, in Purim, in the Megillah, you get this as well. That the first year they're celebrating just surviving, but the year after, who sets up the celebration? Not Mordechai. The Pesukim describe that it was a populist celebration because the year after is when they celebrate. The year of, you sort of celebrate, yay, okay, we survived. The year after is like it's behind us. That's this Pesach, and that's the one where these people, because of their commitment to the dignity of human life, are willing to risk participation in this to care for the mate mitzvah. Right? Out of dedication to duty, they would have to give their attention to something that is dull, depressing, and even deadly. Now, everyone likes a party. Yet these people, that's his quote, okay? I don't know if I like parties. Yet these people chose the path that was more difficult. They care for the mate mitzvah. They were willing to forego the joys of being with their families on this great Passover Seder, willing to give up the company of wife and children, of family and neighbors, of joy and celebration, in order to pursue what was their clear moral obligation. They had a flair for the undramatic. Which is, I think, an amazing description of sometimes what halacha is, right? I'm committed to what I have to do and what is right. Even if that's very, very pointedly the less exciting path. Right? A flair for the undramatic. They practiced centuries earlier the principle that Solomon later proclaimed, Tov lelechet al beit avel, milechet al beit mishteh. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of merrymaking. This readiness to forgo the ceremonial and the pleasurable for the dutiful and the unexciting is even more meritorious, according to one opinion in the Talmud, which identifies this mate mitzvah as the corpse of Yosef. Now, the next line is even... I really like this drasha because, you know, I mean, you guys know I know I like Agadata, but I find his analysis of this Agadata as masterful. And he says, what are Chazal getting at when they say that maybe the mate that they were being involved in was the mate of Yosef? So he said, we think of Yosef as the hero. Except try to get into the heads of the people who are leaving Mitzrayim. And he said, he thinks, right, one can easily imagine that Joseph was then an unpopular figure. Yes, very good. Right? Because, he said, the interpretation of history vary in every age. Joseph was no doubt a fated hero. He was the man who brought the Israelites to Egypt. And they were now marching away from Egypt. Joseph represented the Egyptian phase of Jewish history, which they were now trying to reverse and to negate. Probably, Joseph had about him the tarnished halo of the Shtadlan, the aristocratic Jew of great influence in the court of the Gentiles who would plead on behalf of his benighted brethren, a kind of Jewish Uncle Tom. But this new generation was one of democratic self-determination, one of popular mass activism, so that those who bore his coffin had not only to relinquish the pomp and gaiety of Passover, but they also had to bear the burden of devotion to an unpopular cause, all because of an ancient promise and a feeling of historic obligation. And I honestly had never thought about that in Midrash, and that perhaps that's what the Gemara is getting at. That it's not, right? This was like doubly important because Yosef represented going down to Galut. He represented everything that got them there. Right now, we read the Torah and we read these as separate stories because we look at all of them from distance. But these people didn't. Right, for them, Yosef was the symbol. Right, maybe they, you know, respected him in a certain way, but he's still the symbol of going down to Egypt. And that only doubles down on this notion that the people here who are carrying his coffin are willing to give up celebrating leaving Egypt to take care of the person who got them there in the first place. And that is a particularly striking expression of commitment to duty over what feels good in the moment. Yes, Asher.
Are we assuming that the B'nai Israel is similar to Paro, Shiloh Yadayat Yosef? They don't understand what Rabbi Yosef did in...
I mean, maybe they did, but still, it's undeniable. He's the reason they're there. He invited the whole family. Come.
Absolutely.
Right? And we well, yes, but if you remember, we talked about how much he was responsible for what happened afterwards, right? Because remember, he's the one who starts the possibility of everyone becoming slaves.
Right, because he makes everyone sell all their stuff.
Correct, and he lets the Jews remain the aristocracy, right? Which may have set in motion...
If the Jews remain the aristocracy, then they should have money and power when no one else does.
Yeah, but it also, in a populist uprising, that doesn't go very well. So then Ray Lam quotes a few stories. I'll skip through it. But right, his basic idea here, as I said, is that that what you learn from here is that, note the emphasis, the exciting, my answer, right, he says, Judaism is not a matter of riot and teach-ins and sit-ins and protests and demonstrations and marathons of any kind. It is the excitement of a life lived according to noble principles, with a historical awareness and with a willingness to endure and suffer for a great cause. It represents the excitement of representing God every single day of one's life in a world that turns a deaf ear to the Almighty. And this is his argument, right, that to really be committed, what you learn from this is this idea of how far commitment goes to that which you're supposed to do, not just that which is exciting and sensational. The rest of the drasha, I'll just say sort of parenthetically, is fascinating, because he takes this up and says, well, once we're talking about this, let's... He gives real mussar, and he says, here are the mitzvot that you guys don't keep. And it's really fascinating from a historical perspective. See, in 1965 at the Jewish Center, what were the mitzvot that he was that he thought were ignored? So one was shatnez, which we know that until the shatnez factory is right, got started, okay. Another was giluach betar, that apparently people were shaving with a razor. I don't know. The one that really shocked me was mishloach manot. He said that apparently in 1965 no one kept mishloach manot. I know, right? I was completely shocked by this. But they sent gifts to each other on Hanukkah because, for reasons he didn't want to say from the pulpit.
Christmas.
Right, it was around Christmas. I was trying to figure out if there was Yeah, I asked around some people about this. Was there a rejuvenation of Purim? So I emailed Dr. Zev Elef, who's done basically his PhD and all his work on American Jewish history. He was as interested as I am, and he's looking into it, but he doesn't know offhand. I emailed Professor Mark Shapiro, who said he doesn't think it's so surprising, because the Jewish Center was a lot of people who were not Shomer Shabbos in 1965, right? They were just nominally Orthodox, right? That was the height of, it didn't really matter, right? Some people could easily have belonged to conservative Orthodox, it didn't really matter, it was just what shul you went to, but their practice, he said Purim was just not on the agenda. I asked another one of my friends who's an expert in drushot. He wrote his PhD on the drushot of the chief rabbis in England, right? Dr. Ben Elton, who's the rabbi in the great synagogue in Australia, in Sydney, and he also said it doesn't surprise him, because he said knowing traditional Jewry in England, the same is true. They go to shul on Yom Kippur, but Purim is they don't even know, right? They go to Megillah at night. But during the day, they don't have a suda, they don't go to Megillah. There is a certain, and I guess this is just different for me. It's I'm assuming, I think at this point, anyone who's even nominally Orthodox, Mishloach Manot is the most exciting thing in the world to do. Right? It's the most, nowadays, every drasha in every shul I've ever been to is, don't spend so much money on Mishloach Manot, don't forget the poor people, give more matzot lev yonim. Mishloach Manot is that mitzvah you don't have to encourage people to do. Everyone likes doing Mishloach Manot, you have to tone it down. But I guess that was not, the Jewish Center in 1965. But at any rate, That's Rabbi Lam's word here, right? Is that if you really understand that this was the... And again, just to reiterate what I think his chidushim are here, because here I think there's not just an inspirational drasha, I think there's actual... There's real chidushim in the Agadata, is that what the Gemara is getting at is that you have to remember, to understand the greatness here, you have to remember it's the first Pesach, and therefore they're giving up in that celebration, either to be involved in the Meit Mitzvah, which is just about commitment, or even to be committed to Yosef, which represents going down to Mitzrayim. I mean, it seems to me that that's why Chazal are so... over the top in their praise of these people, and it also gives more potency to their words, right? Lama nigara, why do we have to lose out? They're saying, like, this is a real loss. Like, we're willing to do it if possible, but is that really what God wants? And you understand more what they are coming to. Like, is it really true that first Pesach we can't celebrate it because of our commitment to mitzvot? And Moshe's answer is no, and it's in that schud that we get Pesach. Pesach Sheni, and it really does emphasize the extent to which we celebrate people who are committed no matter what, and value mitzvot and not just, you know, what feels good as an exciting and a sensationalist and the like. Okay.